warning from Britain's Prime Minister to try to stop Brexit slipping from her grasp. On Saturday, Theresa May said the longer it takes to find a compromise deal with the opposition Labour Party, the less likely it is the UK will leave the European Union at all. May and the Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn have held 3 days of meetings to attempt to agree to a Brexit deal Parliament will say yes to. But talks have not progressed as much as was hoped.
U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen will be leaving her position. That's according to a tweet from President Donald Trump on Sunday. In a follow-up tweet, Trump said Kevin McAleenan will become acting secretary. CBS reported the news of Nielsen's departure earlier in the day, but said it was unclear if her exit would be voluntary. The department Nielsen heads has recently come under intense scrutiny over its treatment of migrants, from a policy of separating children from their parents to the deaths of migrant children while in federal custody.
In an attempt to break through in the wide-open female athleisure market, Adidas has announced a partnership with pop and R&B superstar Beyoncé. Adidas will team with the singer to create performance and lifestyle products, including signature footwear, clothing, and also to relaunch Queen Bee's Ivy Park brand.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's April the 8th. It's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. Here we go with another business day, another business week getting underway. Lots to cover this morning. We'll have the latest on the markets in just a second, some top business headlines as well. On the program today, the founder of We Are All Human Foundation will be with us. Leadership Summit is coming up, their Hispanic Leadership Summit coming up in Chicago, and we'll preview that. That'll be in our first segment this morning. A little bit later this morning, the money that colleges are spending to get into the Final Four, everybody's been dealing with March Madness and enjoying that over the last month or so. Jill Berman will be here from MarketWatch.com. That'll be in our second segment at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll keep you posted this hour on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are down nearly a quarter of a percent this morning at 55 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures lower as well by about a quarter of a percent. As we look around the globe this morning, in London, shares are lower by a quarter percent. On the FTSE in Germany, down by nearly a half percent. In France, nearly a tenth of a percent. In Asia, markets are going to end the day mixed. The Nikkei down nearly a quarter. The Hang Seng up nearly a half a percent. The Shanghai off just a fraction. And oil in the United States is trading at $63.37 a barrel. That's up about 29 cents from the last level check there. Some stories that we'll begin with this morning from the business world. American Airlines extending its flight cancellations through early June as the Boeing 737 MAX remains grounded. Previously, the airline said it would cancel about 90 flights a day through April 24th. Now flights are being canceled through June 5th. Boeing is currently working to upgrade its software in the aftermath of two deadly crashes involving the 737 MAX within just 5 months of each other. In a statement, American Airlines says it continues to wait for the FAA to clear the 737 MAX so its fleet can resume flying. Pinterest is putting out a filing with the price range for its IPO today. The New York Times and Wall Street Journal reporting that the online image search company plans to set a price range valued below the last investor level of $12 billion. Pinterest is a part of a crush of high-profile but unprofitable tech starts working their way toward the public market. And as we mentioned, oil prices are a little bit higher. Since November, international benchmark crude oil up 38 cents a barrel to 70.72. We mentioned the U.S. Supply there at about 63.45 a barrel. Ongoing supply cuts by OPEC and Russia, along with U.S. sanctions on exports from Iran and Venezuela, are giving prices a lift. And you heard in the opening montage there news about Brexit. There is some developments this morning as well. Prime Minister Theresa May says she is going to press ahead with her bid for a Brexit compromise with the opposition, despite a backlash from her own party as she attempts to prevent Britain from crashing out of the European Union this week without a deal. Let's begin front and center this morning. We Are All Humans, Hispanic Leadership Summit, coming to Chicago. Joining us this morning is Claudia Romo Edelman, the founder of the We Are All Human Foundation. Claudia, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Great talking to you.
Yes, it's nice having you this morning. I know the summit is coming up, and as we begin our conversation this morning, I want to sort of set the stage for people about the sort of scene in the Hispanic community and the Latino community, the overall theme of the discourse in our country these days. And I'm sure that's where your leadership summit is going to be focusing a lot of its attention, isn't it?
Right. At the end of the day, what is very important for everybody to know is that Hispanics are a super contributor to this country. We're 59 million. We're 18% of the population and growing. We're going to be 30 million voters by 2020. We bring so much capital, voters, and passion and employment, and we're very much feeling part of the American being. So Hispanic values are American values, and yet Hispanics, one, do not feel, do not know about their own contributions to the country, and the most important one, the one that we're trying to tackle through this summit, is that Hispanics are not unified. We still think in 26 different origins, the Mexicans don't talk to the Colombians, don't talk to the Cubans, and even more fragmented than that. And what we're trying to address at through the World Human Foundation is that unification. What unifies, what puts the common, what's our shared dream, what's our common agenda, and how are we going to achieve that? We had our first summit in December at the United Nations, more than 350 Hispanic leaders and other parties that care about the Hispanic community joined. Everybody voted about their priorities, and out of those three priorities, which were, not surprisingly, education, financial empowerment, and improved perception, the Chicago Summit will be the first mini UN summit in Chicago, April 26, to discuss how do we change, how do we move from that framework, from that joint dream, common dream, to a joint game plan. So the Chicago Summit is upcoming, and we're having an open arms to everyone that cares about the Hispanic community to come and join the debate.
What do you say about, and maybe it's different from the Hispanic community, but it feels like the only thing that we're hearing on a national level from our news media about your communities is that the wall and border security and those issues, rather than some of the things that you've just talked about. How does your organization try to get above that noise?
Oh, Hispanics actually, like non-Hispanics, are really not aware of the basic facts that our organization will try to make as much noise as possible by having all these corporate partnerships and media partnerships. For example, Hispanic Latinas create 6 times faster than any other group in America small businesses. Hispanics have created 87% of every new job since the Great Recession. We consume 3 times more media than non-Hispanics, and we will be actually 70% of the future labor force of America. That is actually what preoccupies Hispanics' mind and what we should be more aware of. However, it is important. Migration is an important issue that we should have a common voice of, but it only represents 5 to 7% of the mind share of Hispanics, meaning first, second, and third generation of Hispanics are by far more preoccupied about not losing their job for a robot than about migration.
Yeah, and it feels like that's what we all should be worried about, concerned about. I know border security is important. You mentioned there in the beginning that there are all the different kinds of political views and countries of origin, depending, pushes your politics in one way or the other. Does that mean you all vote differently for different parties and different issues? And is that something that you're trying to change a little bit and kind of focus in a bipartisan way on some of the things that we can tackle?
A fragmented group will never have the power of a unified community. So that is my focus number one, which is let's feel the power of being one. Let's feel the power of feeling Hispanic, and as such, be empowered to go and vote, because we have the self-esteem and we know that our voice matters. Recently, currently, only 20% of Hispanics feel represented or feels that their vote or their voice counts. Therefore, we have a low presence at the election ballots. And nevertheless, what we're trying to do is understand what are the three things that we all care about, what are the one or two things that we can agree on, so that we can actually have our voice unified. We understand who to vote to based on who is going to actually be the best for our future. If you don't know what your agenda is, it's very hard to identify which candidate actually is putting it up to you. What we're doing as well is making sure that presidential candidates and politicians understand that the Hola Amigo campaign is over. We cannot be an afterthought. We cannot be the last minute, like adding a couple of words in Spanish or you know, like using a sombrero to attract our vote. We're 30 million voters for the 2020 elections. We have to be by far more front and center in any political campaign. So we're trying to make sure that while we identify what's our power being a community and unified, we also make sure that we know what to ask for and what to identify in any political candidate in the future.
Claudia, I want to talk a little bit about what's going to be happening there, what the agenda looks like, and what the mission is of the summit.
Absolutely. The mission of this summit and every summit that we will do throughout the year, which we will do Illinois, the main typical traditional Hispanic markets are Chicago, California, and then we will go to Texas. There are three main insights that we will try to address and the reason why we're doing all of this. The first one, and I want you to pay attention to the magnitude of this number, is that 77% of Hispanics have no idea of their own contributions to the country. You go imagine that in your radio station, 77% of the staff have no idea what their contributions are to the bigger picture. That's massive. The number two is that 90% of Hispanics feel Hispanic, but they don't feel as a community. So I'm optimistic because the jump between feeling Hispanic and acting as a Hispanic community is not too big. And the third and last one is that 74% of Hispanics feel they have to be someone they are not in their workplace. And so what our Chicago Summit will try to do on April 26th from lunchtime to 5 o'clock is to address those issues. How are we going to move from framework to game plan? How are we going to address the issues of education? What do we care? We know that we care about education, but what about it? What is the policy and corporate recommendation that really matters for Hispanics that will unify us in fighting for it together, in identifying it in political campaigns? Is it finishing high school? Is it early childhood development? Is it scholarships? The same about financial empowerment. Is it access to capital? Is it basically that we have to have better translation services or banking or financial literacy? And the change of perception is Hispanics. Do we need a more representation in the voices that you have in different media organizations? Is it actually having more role models? So our summit will include, is co-hosted by Dr. Juan Andrade, Richard Edelman, Jose Luis Prado from Evan Foods, and myself. And we have an incredible advisory board and strategic committee that I'm very proud of. Andre Arbeláez, Don Cook from the McCormick Foundation, Daniel Contreras from Microsoft, Maria Salcedo from Ulta, and so on. Feature speakers that will speak about these issues and about the Hispanic promise, which is the corporate activation to promise Hispanics a more inclusive environment, include Michael Grady, the chairman and president of Northern Trust, Michael Lev from the Chicago Tribune, Howard Tolman from Ed Kaplan, Terry Arbizu from Univision, we have Ricardo Strada from Metropolitan Family Members, and Samara Mejia, among the 30 more people that will be with us discussing and voting again. What are the priorities of the Hispanic community to come to an action plan that is joint? We have more than 150 people, and we'll be in Chicago for half of that day, the 26th of April from 12 to 5. We're going to start with a luncheon that talks precisely about the beauty of Hispanics. We have to recognize that our beauty comes in the contributions that we bring to this country. and that the promise of Hispanics is the promise of America. So we very much look forward to being in Chicago and to be able to have these discussions. All our discussions are with half Hispanics and half with the other parties that care about Hispanics, be from media, technology, brands, and other organizations, civil society organizations. So we're very much looking forward.
Well, and we wish you the best, and we'll look for the results from that day. It certainly sounds like you have a power lineup, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. I hope that you can come and join us.
All right, Claudia Romo Edelman, founder of We Are All Human Foundation, the Hispanic Leadership Summit, coming up April 26th, Friday, April 26th, from 12 to 5 p.m. It's going to be at the Radisson Blu Aqua Hotel in Chicago. That's at 221 North Columbus Drive. You can find more at weareallhuman.org.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the program as the March Madness winds down to the championship game. The focus turns to just how much money colleges have spent to get to this place. Joining us this morning is Jillian Berman, a reporter at MarketWatch.com, who's been covering some of this. Jillian, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The road to the Final Four is not a cheap one, is it?
No. So all of the teams in the Final Four spent, you know, tens of millions of dollars. Three out of the four teams spent more than $100 million on their athletic program. So it's definitely, you know, not an insignificant cost.
Where does the money come from? How do they generate that kind of money? And what are they paying for?
Yeah, so the money comes from a variety of sources, you know, but some of the biggest sources are obviously media deals. They get donations, ticket sales in some cases, corporate advertising partners, and then, you know, often there's a student fee associated with athletics, and so that'll flow into the money. And then even in some cases, too, the athletic department is supported by the broader university. And then in terms of what they spend it on, you know, it's spent on coaching, on paying for coaches' salaries, recruiting, obviously student scholarships, facilities, and things like that.
I know your story talks a little bit about whether or not it's appropriate to be spending this kind of money if that's an appropriate thing for them to do. Where did the sides come down on that?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a complicated question. Obviously college sports they bring something to a college, right? Sometimes visibility, advertising, things like that. And so, you know, colleges, the academic mission often does benefit, right, from having a good sports program. At the same time, you don't want to take away resources that could be spent on, you know, on faculty or other things, with sports. That's a fair criticism. But, you know, a lot of the major sports programs, actually, the athletics department is self-sustaining, which means they're not getting money from, you know, the broader university. So in that case, you know, kind of the conversation gets even, you know, there's another level of complication there.
Mm-hmm. And I like the story, again, on MarketWatch.com. Your story on MarketWatch.com has a nice graphic that shows some of the spending at the colleges. I know we're talking about Virginia and Texas Tech being, I guess, in the championship game after the Final Four, but you have all the Final Four teams there and all the schools and what they spent on athletics and academic. The two areas of spending, athletics and academics, are quite different from each other.
Yeah, so, you know, even at the schools where they are still spending a lot of money on athletics, they do still spend more on academics. So, for example, at the University of Virginia, where they spent $100.3 million on athletics, they spent $1.4 billion on the academic mission. So, you know, academics is still the priority spending-wise.
Some of the other schools, Auburn spent $132 million, but they have $830 million for academics. Michigan State, $117 million, but $1.8 billion for academics. Texas Tech, $87 million with $702 million for academics. Money spent here is, what the colleges will argue, is for a good purpose. I know when we had talked about the Ramblers last year, the Loyola Ramblers last year in Chicago, they were talking about the return that they would get on that investment. With all of the attention that was paid to their school, it would draw in new contributions and new donations, more students, those kinds of things. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there's definitely research that shows that, you know, when a team appears in a visible sort of sports event, that increases applications. So I can't remember what year it was, but a few years ago, Florida Gulf Coast University made it pretty far in the tournament, and they saw a rise in applicants. You know, it's kind of hard to say how well that works. I spoke with the president of Texas Tech, and he said last year when they made it to the Elite Eight for the first time, it didn't really give them a boost applicant-wise. At the same time, you know, getting to the Final Four, he knows that the brand got out there. He mentioned, you know, being on the front page, the front page of the New York Times. So it does definitely, of course, increase visibility, especially, you know, a program like Texas Tech, which is, you know, it's a little bit more, it's very popular regionally, but, you know, maybe a little less popular nationally.
Yeah, and the story talks about how Texas Tech is sort of kind of pulling away from using institutional funds for athletics. Has it been successful in doing that, and what's the model there?
Yeah, so they have in the past, I guess, you know, 3 or so years, they've worked to do that. And the past, I think this last academic year was the first time that they were not receiving, where the athletics department didn't receive a subsidy from the academic mission. And, you know, Texas Tech is one of, I believe, a couple dozen programs that does that. And, you know, the schools that are sort of the most well-known, you know, also have the most lucrative programs, in those cases, they can afford to be self-sustaining. But, you know, it takes a lot to get there. So you sort of have to spend a lot to get to the place where you're bringing in enough revenue that you can say, okay, we don't need to rely on the broader university for funding anymore.
What is the gold mine of revenue for a college like this? Is it just private donations, or is it corporate sponsorships, or both?
Yeah, so I think the media deals are some of the big, that's kind of where a lot of the money comes from. The president of Texas Tech was talking about how, you know, being in a Power 5 conference there in the Big 12 helps with that. So they obviously get, you know, they get a certain amount of money from the conference, and, you know, and then when their games are on TV, and then obviously sort of through their own deals negotiated with media. And so that is really a big source of revenue. And if you're not, you know, if you're not a competitive school and you're not in one of those conferences, you're maybe not going to get as much revenue.
Yeah. And then there's the endowment. We haven't talked really much about endowments, but that's a big part of this too, this conversation, isn't it?
Yeah, so endowments, you know, are definitely a big part of the conversation around, you know, sort of the sources that money, that colleges, excuse me, have for money. And these schools, and, you know, I don't have it offhand, their endowments, but I know schools, you know, some schools have very large ones, upwards of $1 billion. And in those cases, I believe if the athletics department is self-sustaining, they're not going to be using the broader endowment on, you know, on that, but they might, you know, the athletic department might have its own, you know, endowment funding that that it's using to pay for this stuff.
Where there has been controversy over sports funding, it has been where some state schools are involved, where the states, Illinois, for example, our state schools have a lot of funding issues because of our own budget problems.
Yeah.
It's sort of a secondary problem aside from sports that sports has really nothing to do with. Is that a fair way to describe that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in states where the state schools are having funding challenges, you know, on the one hand, it's true. Sports has, especially if the athletics department is bringing in its own revenue and paying its own expenses, sports doesn't really have anything to do with that. It's not a drain on the university. At the same time, I think what's you know, what's troubling for people is to watch, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars get spent on sports, and know that, you know, students maybe in the general population aren't able to get scholarships or, you know, or things like that because the funding is so limited and tight.
Yeah, and extra painful is when those colleges raise tuition to cover some of the cost of those funds. That's, I think, when it hits home the most, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, right, to see tuition go up and to also see the money being spent, so much money being spent on sports, even if it's kind of coming from separate pots, you know, still is hard for people to get behind.
Yeah, and we haven't even got into the conversation of student loan debt and that big problem. Some of these schools that are in the Final Four, the average cost of debt after graduation is about $20,000 for students.
Yeah, and so, you know, and that's, you know, that's a little less than average at all of them. But, you know, it's definitely something to think about because even at schools where the revenue, you know, where the athletic department brings in its own revenue and pays its own expenses, it's often the case that student fees do go towards the athletic department. So in all the Final Four schools except Michigan State, that is the case. So, you know, that's usually a mandatory fee. And, you know, so eventually it could contribute to a student's debt, even though, you know, often it's a relatively small sum.
Are you picking any winners in the matchup tonight?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not much of a sports commentator, so I will hold off on that.
All right, very good. Well, Jillian, thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate your reporting.
Okay, thanks so much.
Jillian Berman, a reporter at MarketWatch. We're going to link out to her story at MarketWatch.com on the cost of getting to the Final Four for some colleges.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are down 75 points, more than a quarter of a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures are lower as well. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, it happens almost every year at this time of the year, as in South America, they're finishing up harvest and trying to move their product to ports to go into the world market. But this time, it was not muddy roads or a strike by port workers. Part of a bridge collapsed early on Saturday, potentially affecting shipment of grain such as soybeans and corn through northern ports. That according to local authorities and an agribusiness consultant. Corey Melby, the consultant, said the bridge that collapsed is the main roadway that connects Brazil's farm country to its northern ports. And shipping statistics show some 5.7 million tons of soybeans, 3 million tons of corn were loaded out in that region, and they were expecting the volume to increase this year because of the good harvest. In another foreign note, talks between negotiators trying to settle the China-U.S. trade situation will resume in Washington this week. Not face-to-face, it will be by video conference. How many days over the last 2 or 3 months have we heard officials say, we're getting close, but we're not there yet? And according to Larry Kudlow, White House advisor, he said, there's no let-up here. This is an ongoing process. The other market situation we'll be watching this week is the lean hog contract, as we continue to be concerned about the spread of African swine fever in China and other countries of the world. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple of more stories before we leave you this morning. Delta Airlines ranks first in a long-running study that ranks U.S. airlines by how often flights arrive on time and other statistical measures. Researchers who crunch the numbers also say that as a whole, U.S. airlines are getting better at handling baggage and overcrowded flights and are getting fewer complaints. Academics at Wichita State University and Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University have conducted the annual study for 29 years using data collected by the U.S. Transportation Department. They looked at 2018 rates of on-time arrivals, mishandled baggage, bumping passengers, and consumer complaints. Delta up from second place Last year, JetBlue Airways is second, followed by Southwest Airlines, and then last year's winner, Alaska Airlines. Discount carrier Frontier Airlines ranks last, just behind American Airlines. New Zealand's official privacy watchdog is describing Facebook as morally bankrupt and suggested his country will follow neighboring Australia's lead by making laws that could jail executives over extreme violence such as the Christchurch mosque shootings. The privacy commissioner's comments today on Twitter follow previous criticisms of Facebook and the response to a gunman using the platform to live stream some of the slaughter of nearly 50 worshippers. Facebook said in a statement it's deeply committed to strengthening policies, improving technology, and working with experts to keep Facebook safe. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, April the 8th. Factory orders for February due this morning. Analysts expect a sharp fall off from January's 0.1% increase. The experts are forecasting a 0.6% decline for February. This week, JOLTS labor survey, the job openings and labor turnover survey due out. We'll also get the IMF World Economic Outlook tomorrow. Delta Airlines, Bed Bath & Beyond report earnings on Wednesday. Also, an EU summit on Brexit is Wednesday. Rite Aid and Disney earnings on Thursday. And then Friday, J.P. Morgan, Chase, and Wells Fargo earnings, capping a busy week as we get ready to kick up earnings season again. Some of the things that could move the markets today and through the week.